Hi, this is Bill Arnold. Missed a show or need me talking to help you sleep tonight? I have several solutions to that situation. Here are the podcasts from the show. You are the best for listening and supporting Faith Radio.
Butler, Illinois, 62015.
And a warm welcome to Afternoons with me. I'm Bill Arnold. I'm awfully excited about what's ahead today. We've got a great show lined up for you, like I hope we do every day that you tune in. But Jason Stonehouse is in my studio. We're going to bring him on in just a little bit. But also want to just say what a week we've had. There's been a lot of great interviews this week. And if you've missed some of it, you might want to peruse the website, MyFaithRadio.com. Look over all the guests that we had on the show and all the other shows that are on the network, because there's so much great content on. And maybe there's something you've been grappling with this week and there's something that would be talking to that issue or concern you have. There's just so much good material that gets produced every week. And I know you can't listen 24/7, but there is... That's why we have the podcast, and that's at myfaithradio.com. If you are listening in the Fargo area, 102.5 FM or 1200 AM at KFNW, just a reminder that there's going to be a really fun comedy night May 31st at Bethel Church. If you are thinking about what am I going to do the last day of the month, I've got your problem solved. Come see myself along with Bob Stromberg and Michael Donnelly. We did that 70th anniversary comedy night here at the University of Northwestern, March 16th, and we sold out the night hall, 1,400 people crammed in and laughed themselves silly. So we will do that again at Bethel Church, May 31st in Fargo. Please make plans to come see us. We would love to, I'd love to meet you, and I'd love to shake your hand firmly while maintaining good eye contact, and I will use your name 2 to 3 times per sentence. So that's... what I can promise for now. All right, let's take a 60-second break, and then when we come back, Jason Stonehouse, he's written a book called Something More. I know that there's been a part in your Christian journey where you've asked yourself, is this all there is? And maybe you've been a little nagged by the sense that something is missing. There's a good chance maybe something is. We'll talk about it when we come back.
The CSB Worldview Study Bible aims to be a resource that equips readers to discuss, defend, and clearly state the truth of the Bible and the reason for our hope with others. Featuring study notes and articles by Christian scholars, the CSB Worldview Study Bible will help you understand the scriptures and share it with others. We're giving away one copy each week this month. Register to win at myfaithradio.com today.
The mission of Faith Radio is to lead people to Christ and nurture them in their faith through Christ-centered media. In all that we do and the programs we air, we want to lift up Jesus and make Him known. It's your prayer and financial support that equip us to make this mission possible. Thank you again for your ongoing support and investment in our ministry. To make a gift today, you can call 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-93-FAITH.
It is 3 minutes after the hour. I think we're all pretty hardwired for something more. Whatever it is, we want more, pretty much in every area of our life. Pastor Jason Stonehouse is in my studio. He's written a book called Something More, Pursuing the Life You Were Made to Live. I'm intrigued. Jason, welcome.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Yeah. Congrats on the book.
Thanks.
Yeah. People like it.
So far.
Yeah. So, I've heard no complaints at this point.
Well, that's great.
Yeah. So I think you should be encouraged.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this whole hardwiring that we have called there's got to be something more. And this is pretty much every area of our life, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And this book was really about 15 years. I kind of came back into it back and forth. And really it all started when I was 16 and sitting in the back row of the balcony at my church and doing what all the rest of the high school kids did. We couldn't get further away from the pastor if we were in the parking lot, you know? So we were just passing notes back and forth to one another while the pastor was droning on, you know? And it was at that moment I looked down this row of probably like 25 high school students. And I said to myself, is this it? Like, is this what it means to be a Christian? You know, going to church, sitting in the seat, listening to a sermon, standing up to sing some songs. Is that it? Is that what it means to be a follower of Jesus? And so I think that question really bothered me at, like, again, 16, 17 years old. And so it started me on a journey to say, if this is what it is, I'm not sure that I want to sign up for this, you know? And so I think what the book does is really try to take you through that same journey of just discovering where do we fall short? Where do we miss it? Where do we get kind of caught up in some roadblocks there? And sometimes we can be our own worst enemy when it comes to church and all of that. The intentions, now that I'm a pastor, we have really good intentions. We have a good heart, but a lot of times it doesn't always translate to the individual and their own spiritual search and journey.
Now, we all have hope, but usually we're hoping for more evidence or more of something that gives us the pat on the back that says, yeah, God's got this. He's providing. And, you know, sometimes if we don't see certain kinds of evidence, we start to think, does God care?
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of times what happens for us is we get caught up in like a systematic view of faith where we're like, well, I'm doing the things that God wants me to do. Why isn't he doing what he's supposed to do? You know, I'm holding up my end of the bargain. And so, like you're saying, you don't get that extra little oomph. And so you're like, where's God in this? Like, why isn't he doing his part? Like, I'm reading the Bible, I'm going to church, I'm doing these things. And so I think that leaves us with this hunger, because I don't think God intended it to be this system that I do A7 like a vending machine and, you know, spit out what I need.
So. Yeah. Well, you know, I think there's this story. I heard it first when I was probably in high school, and it's just this little made-up story where a person apparently goes to heaven and they say, oh, this is fantastic, and you go to this drawer with your name on it and you pull out the drawer and you see all these amazing blessings and you go, oh, this is spectacular. You know where I'm going with this, don't you?
No, keep going.
Oh, okay, cool.
I haven't heard this
one. And you see all these spectacular blessings, and you go, and the person's thinking, finally, I get to heaven, and I finally get to enjoy all these. And God's saying, no, those are all the blessings I wanted you to have on earth. You just never asked for them.
Oh, interesting.
And the idea would be, and maybe this ties into something more, is like we're always wanting, hoping, trusting for something more, and maybe we're not having the results that we so deeply desire. Our heart's desire is for more.
Yeah, and I think sometimes we get passive in it. Like, we just sit there, and like you're saying, like, we're waiting. When are these blessings going to come?
Yeah.
Instead of really saying, no, God's wanting you to be moving. It's easier to, you know, steer the moving car than one that's parked. And God's like, I want you to move. I want you to make some progress. I want you to move forward. And I think we have to get to a point where spiritual growth is assumed. It's normal. Whereas I think a lot of times it's like we get to a certain plateau, and then we like, okay, I'm just going to wait here, you know, in this holding tank until God takes me home or God gives me some kind of blessing, instead of really saying, no, God's asking me to be on the move, and he can move through that. Mm-hmm. So,
Jason, I want to hear what some of these moves might be. I mean, are they tied into spiritual disciplines? What would be some of the first steps we would take to realizing this more, life?
I think one of the biggest things that was a breakthrough for me, especially, I mean, I grew up on the East Coast, so right outside
Where?
Of New York City, northern New Jersey.
What
so
exit?
I grew up at, let's see, 153.
153, so 153, okay,
yeah.
Good. Now I know
Garden
where
State
you live.
Parkway.
Yeah, okay.
And so the fast-paced culture was just a norm. And so I think one of the greatest things that has helped me start to pursue something more is a practice that I just call reflection, which is essentially looking at my story and then looking at God's story and just really taking the time to stop and reflect on those different things. And so what often happens, I think, in our lives is we just move from activity to activity to activity. Even sometimes in the church, we are so busy doing all these church things that we don't really take the time to just stop and reflect, intentionally take the time to just stop, pause. A lot of times for me, Mondays are my day off as a pastor, and so I'll often go to a park and just go for a walk and just take that time to just like, let me play back the last week. Let me think through, where was God showing up in that? Because sometimes the more is there, mm-hmm. but we're not even acknowledging it. We're not even seeing it because we're not even stopping long enough to say, God, where is your hand moving right now?
Yeah, because we live in the execute mode.
Right, exactly.
So the reflective mode is going to give us a chance to pause and go, whoa, look what happened last week.
Right.
And
yeah.
I almost didn't realize it.
Yeah. And so to see God's hand, see God's movement in that. And I think the other part of it is just really beginning to discover more how God's wired us. And because some of us are going to really, when I said, hey, I'm going to go for a walk, some people are like, that's not me. You know, mm-hmm. I don't want to reflect. But there is things that God's wired us up that if we can lean into those and then discover what is God called me to? What is God inviting me into that we can step into that and see some good movement?
What if you go on this walk and you have this reflection time and because you're not looking at your phone, you're not right. doing anything other than maybe contemplating or reflecting, you actually hear, I don't know, the voice of God.
Right.
You know,
novel thought.
So who wouldn't want to do that? Why right. would they be pushing against that?
Well, I think there's really two big things that I talk about in the book, and that is spiritual junk food and spiritual fast food. And I think those are the two reasons that we don't. Spiritual junk food is really those things that fill us up that are not God. And so I love this verse in Proverbs 27:7. It says, one who is full loathes honey. And it's always just really caught me because it's like when you're already full, even good stuff you don't
right.
want to eat.
Right.
And I think what happens a lot of times as Christians is we fill ourselves with all the things of the world that we don't really have room for God. So like we get that fake sense of filling when it's really not. So that's spiritual junk food. And then spiritual fast food is food. Obviously, fast food is cheap and it's quick.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do this spiritually. We get things that don't cost us a lot. That's the cheap and quick. They don't take a lot of our time.
Mm-hmm.
And so we think if I could just get my spiritual life in this box that it doesn't take a lot of my time and it doesn't cost a lot, then that's what I need. And I think a lot of Christians are feeding off of spiritual fast food instead of really going for the full meal that God wants to put out on his banquet table for us.
That sounds lovely.
Yeah.
And I'm just hungry enough to be very teased by that whole thing. I'm going to take a little break. When I come back, Jason, I want to ask about how God is going to feed our souls. All right.
Yep.
Because I have what you call a taste for more, and I want God to feed my soul, and I know you want God to feed your soul. So let me take a little break. Jason Stonehouse is in the studio, and we're going to open up the phone lines as well if you have questions about you wanting more and how to get more on your journey. Also, we'll take a text question as well, 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. Ask any question you like. The hard ones will go to Jason. Be back in a minute. It's 18 minutes after the hour. I'm so happy Jason Stonehouse, Pastor Jason Stonehouse, is in the studio. He's written a book called Something More, Pursuing the Life You Were Made to Have. Did I say that right? Made.
Sounds good.
I know. It really
maybe,
does
maybe
sound
we'll
good.
Maybe we'll change it to yours. Yeah.
Yeah.
Made to Live.
Made to Live. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's talk about this banquet you put that God spreads out on the table. We don't want junk food. We don't want fast food. We want God's food. How do we hunger for that and how do we get it?
Well, it's interesting. In the Old Testament, the Jews used to go on this process called pilgrimage. In fact, from Psalms 120 to 134 is all the songs that were sung while they were on their way to pilgrimage. Mm. And so you get this picture of what it is that they're hungering for through that process. But what they tried to do through those songs and through the act of pilgrimage was a number of things. They wanted, first of all, to value God correctly. Because, again, spending time in our day-to-day lives, so many times we can allow other things to become higher priorities in our lives. And so the pilgrimage process says God's going to be the priority. God's our focus. God's where I'm moving. So if you're going to get that banqueting table, just to switch metaphors,
mm-hmm.
you know, is that I need to be hungering for the real thing, which means I can't settle. And that's really a big premise of the whole book, is that how many Christians are settling for where they are spiritually, for what they're eating spiritually. And they're saying, saying, I don't know what's wrong with my faith. Like, I'm doing all the right things, but the problem is they're getting filled up with that fast food or with that junk food instead of really pushing forward. And so it starts really with saying, I'm not stopping until I have the real thing. I'm not stopping till I can taste the steak. Nice. Or if you're a vegetarian, potato casserole or something.
Exactly. Exactly. So we're on the right track here, Jason. Let's talk about the more authentic connection.
Well, I think along with the idea of the system I talked about a little earlier of surrendering this vending machine faith, instead of doing that, I want to be authentic. I want to walk towards God. I'm not trying to manipulate God. I'm not trying to get God to do what I want, because really then I'm God and he's not. And so in that chapter, I talk about this idea of not settling for secondhand faith. And really so much of our lives, if you think about it, from Netflix to all the things that we experience, it's like this secondhand. We look at it through the eyes of someone else, and they're having the experience. Reality TV, they're having the experience, but I'm not. And I think a lot of times we do this with our faith. So we watch the worship leader up front who seems to be really into it, or the pastor is passionate about what he's preaching on, and I almost get a sense that I'm having that faith by watching somebody else live it out. And so I use the example of Jacob when he wrestled with God, and this whole wrestling match that's going on, and it's Jacob really saying, I want to do things my way, and God kind of coming at him the other way. And then he just kind of, you know, gets this point where he's got him in this hold, and he says, you know, I want you to bless me, and he gives him this new name. He focuses his attention on something different, and through that whole experience, that's what I've lived in many years of my life, is wrestling with God, working through the challenges, working through the struggles, working through the counterfeit things that I pursued. And then really saying, God, I want you. I just want you. At the end of the day, I'm just going to hold on. And Jacob wouldn't let go of God because he's like, I just want you. And Jacob was infamous for just creating systems and deceiving and getting plans and plots to somehow get God to do what he wanted. And I think that wrestling match was this what we often call in church the come to Jesus moment, where he's just like, I'm not letting you go. I finally have you. And that's what I really need in life.
Yeah, and he's deeply committed to us, isn't he?
Yeah, he really is.
So Phyllis wrote and said, can Jason give a better description of the spiritual junk food fast food?
Yeah, I mean, I think the junk food would be, oftentimes it's sinful patterns. Sometimes it's not even sinful patterns. Sometimes it's just things in our lives that are good but not great. So we busy ourselves. We're constantly on the go doing things. And so we get this sense that our lives are full, but they're not really full of the good things. That's the junk food piece of it. I wouldn't necessarily, you know, just like junk food is, sometimes it's really, really bad for you. Sometimes it's just, you know, you're going through a whole bag of chips because you're bored. And I think a lot of times we do that in life, is we're looking for that next experience and we fill ourselves with the wrong things. And then the spiritual fast food is just saying, I don't want my faith to cost me a lot. And so I'm willing to do that as long as I don't have to step out of my comfort zone. I'm willing to go try this thing as long as I can still have it kind of my way. And that's, you know, that's the slogan for a lot of fast food. Your way. You can have it your way, your time, and all of that. And I think we come to faith with this idea that that's the way God's going to work. Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. You only have 5 minutes. You can just do this. Take a little verse and, you know, go for it. And I think if you really want the something more, it's going to cost you a little bit. There's going to be some sacrifice. There's going to be some things that are out of your comfort zone. God's going to be inviting you to a step of faith that maybe you've never taken before. Maybe you're going to go across the street and talk to a neighbor. Maybe you're going to join a ministry. Maybe you're going to read a book that you never thought you'd read, or whatever it might be. You're moving in that direction of saying, I'm willing to take the time, and I'm willing to even let it cost me something in order to really pursue what God has.
All right. Now, what you just said sounds like, if I could reduce it to two words, they would be, be intentional.
There you go.
And that's going to require effort too.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of times we have a lot of activity without real purpose. And activity without purpose is just, it makes you feel like, oh, I'm busy. I'm always busy. But if you don't have purpose behind your activity, all it is busyness.
Reminds me of the great C.S. Lewis line, which I repeat often on the show. What isn't eternal is eternally out of date.
Oh, wow. I haven't heard that one yet.
That's a great line.
Yeah, that is a good line. Yeah.
But I think it's kind of what you're sharing. It's just that you get so full of busy stuff, but it doesn't have necessarily a purpose or, produce kingdom results.
Yeah. When I was a youth pastor, I did a I did this game just to kind of make the point. And I gave I divided the kids into two teams, and then I gave them all random things like a sand shovel or a ball and all this stuff. And then I just said, all right, go play. I never told them any rules, never told them anything. So originally they started throwing the balls at each other. And then I'm like, you're out. And they're like, why am I out? I'm like, because you are, you know. And then they would use the shovel and they would try to like hit another kid. I'm like, nope. That's actually 1,000 points. And they're like, what? And then eventually, I let this go on for about 10 minutes. And eventually, all the kids just stood there because they didn't know what to do. And I said, you know, this is what a lot of our faith is like. We don't know what we're doing. We're just moving around with no purpose. And we might feel good because we're playing a quote-unquote game, but you're really not getting anywhere. And when people don't have purpose, they eventually just get bored. And that's what happened to my students, and that's what I think happens to all of us.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you were to talk to the average person and you said to them, have you reached your potential? Do you feel like you're reaching your potential in life? Most people would just turn white. Like, oh, don't ask me that question. The answer is no, you know? Because that was the report I got, like, in every grade school report card, you know? Inattentive, needs help in division, you know? Could do better, is not reaching his potential.
Talks I've been hearing to his that neighbor my whole too life. Much.
I know, yeah. I know. Makes other students laugh. Yes. I mean, you know, so when you talk about maximizing your potential, how do we do that in our spiritual life?
I think one of the key things with maximizing your potential is that middle word, and it's your. I think a lot of times we get these pictures of, well, if I'm going to be a really good Christian, I'm going to be like this person, and I'm going to look like them. But really maximizing your potential is, again, discovering who God made you to be, how has God wired you, and then say, how do I leverage the ways that God has wired me up in order to grow in my faith and in order to make a difference for other people? So I think the idea is getting our eyes off of ourselves and onto how could God use who I am, how he's wired me, how can God use that to actually bless, encourage, help somebody else in their journey as well. And so the maximizing the potential is not so much for you alone, but also to say God made you the way he made you to really make an impact and a difference in the world.
Mm-hmm. Jason, if you were to say to 10 people, if you were to ask them if they felt they were a little stuck in their spiritual faith life, how do you think 10 would respond?
I think 11 would say yes, they're okay. Stuck.
That's 1,000 points.
Yeah.
Just
there you
so
go.
You know.
There you go.
Yeah, we play my game. So this is like an issue for probably everybody.
It really is. And I think we all get stuck at different seasons in our lives. I mean, I think we do have some times of running, but then we get stuck and we don't even know why. How did I get here? And so part of that reflection, and that's why I've had to build it in as a regular rhythm, because I might see progress for a few weeks, but if I go 3 or 4 weeks without stopping to reflect, I often find myself getting stuck pretty quickly. But if I found that if I can build reflection into my regular routine, all of a sudden I'm able to catch some of those things before they get me off the rails, mm-hmm. or before I kind of get into that point of stagnation.
Yeah. Do life's circumstances make us stuck spiritually?
No, I think it's really our responses to life circumstances that make us stuck, because God can really work through any circumstance. But a lot of times we don't look to see what might God want to do through this or with this.
Okay. Jason Stonehaus is in my studio. We're having a great discussion. If you have a question, maybe you have gotten stuck in your spiritual life and you want to maximize your potential, you want God to feed your soul, maybe you want to be more intentional, or you want to surrender and you need some help with that, give us a call or send us a text. We would love to engage with that question or issue you've got. 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. We'll be back in about 90 seconds. Back to the show. It's 31 minutes after the hour. Jason Stonehaus is in the studio. He's written a book called Something More, Pursuing the Life You Were Made to Live. And during the break, Rebecca asked this really smart question. And I'd love to hear that question again and let Jason answer it.
Okay, as long as I get points.
You get points.
That's the theme for the hour. Yes. You get points and we don't know why. Yeah. Jason, you have been talking about the not falling for the illusion that we're growing spiritually when maybe we're just doing more. And we don't want to fill our lives with spiritual fast food. But I think if I hear from so many people that they want to grow deeper, maybe they feel like they're not maybe a little stagnant or not quite getting to the full vibrant picture God has for them. But their instincts are, you know, Bible study, further Bible study, dig more into the Word, spend more time in prayer. Not that those are bad things, but I don't know if there's a difference between what we can do and how to become who we're supposed to be. So maybe the question is, how much of this is on us through practices and what we can actively do? And how do we know that we're really tapping into the growth? What's going to make us grow in who God calls us to be?
Yeah, I think a lot of what comes into our faith is we follow advice that's maybe general advice instead of thinking through and taking ownership of our own spiritual journey. And what that means is that there's going to be seasons in my life where I sit there and say, you know, I've been kind of sitting for a while and I need to get active with my faith and maybe I need to stretch myself a little bit. But it's not the activity itself, it's the why behind the activity. So one of the reasons that spiritual disciplines sometimes get a bad rap is people end up doing them in a very legalistic way. And then during the break, you mentioned this phrase, what happens when they don't work? And I think that's the whole problem, is we look at these things as something that will work for us instead of saying, no, these are just rhythms. Think about it with my relationship with my wife. Somebody might give me advice and say, you know, bring your wife flowers or go on a date with your wife. And then if my reply is, well, will that work? You know, will that work to get her to, you know, love me more or be? Well, no. But if I do those things, it's going to foster a more deeper relationship with her. See, I think a lot of times we don't even view God the same way we view our other relationships. We put him in a different category. And I understand that in part. But there is truly a relational aspect, and I think that's what makes Christianity different than any world religion, is this relational aspect. And so if I think about the spiritual disciplines or serving in a church or going for a walk or, you know, having contemplation time, all of those things are just rhythms of a relationship, not activity to get me somewhere. And so that spiritual growth is, I found the best way to look at it is growth with my relationship with my wife and say, well, what kinds of things do I do that helps our relationship get deeper and more committed to one another and all of that? Well, what if I did the spiritual translation of some of those things in my relationship with God and allow that relationship to go deeper? So I think it's different. Like, there'll be times where my wife and I will be religiously going on a date every week, and then there'll be seasons where that's not it. And so I think, to answer your question more specifically, there's going to be seasons in your life where you're like, you know what, I'm going to do a run here of a couple years of really diving into a ministry and taking some leadership because I really feel like God wants me to spend some time in that, and in that I'm going to grow. And there may be another season in my life where I'm going to do a little bit more of a sabbatical kind of a feel, where I'm going to take a few weeks or a few months or maybe even a year, and I'm just going to really devote it to some of the more personal practices with the things of the Lord. So part of it is just really, again, that reflection process of asking yourself, where am I at right now in my journey, and what might help me take my next step forward, whatever that might be. Hope that's helpful.
Yeah, it's a great question, great answer. All right, now, I'm guessing if you want to pursue the life you were made to live, that it's going to involve other people. Mm-hmm. Very rarely does it not. I mean, usually when you create community and expand your community, there is something more there for you.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, we are created in the image of God. And so I really, one of the exercises I'll do with my staff from time to time is I'll say, you know, what part of God's character does this person best exemplify? And it just forces us to kind of think about each other, because we're all created in the image of God. And there, in a sense, we demonstrate parts of who God is. So we learn even more about who God is by spending time with one another. But I think one of the biggest challenges with relationships in the Christian world is that we look for relationships rather than create them. What I mean is somebody will say, well, oh, does your church like do X, Y, and Z? Or I got to get in a small group like your small group because that's where I got to find a small group where they really get me. And I'm always really believing that we have to create community. It's not just something that we're going to find somewhere. We have to be the kind of person who's loving. We have to be the kind of person who's authentic, who's willing to go there ourselves and sometimes put ourselves out there first before somebody else is going to reciprocate. And so I think part of the challenge in relationships, and if your relationships don't present any challenge, you're not in a relationship because every relationship is challenging, right? And the closer that we get to know each other, the more that we're going to be challenged. And I think that process of stretching us, now if we don't, and a lot of times what happens is, oh, I don't really talk to them anymore. I don't go to that church anymore. Why? The relationship got too difficult. But if we actually stay in the relationship and work through the relationship and come out on the other side, I found that God just meets you in the middle of that mess, in the middle of that stretching time, and really speaks in and oftentimes gives you a piece of character that you didn't have before that now all of a sudden gets fostered or built up or, you know, developed in you. So the relationship piece is so huge. And I hear people sometimes in my church, it's like, it's going to be Jesus and me. And I'm like, no, you need other people. You can't just do Jesus and me. He created you for relationship. And if you abandon the relationship and you say, I'm just going to get spiritual content or biblical content, but you don't have the relationship, you're really denying more than half of the Bible.
Mm-hmm. What would be the enemy of creating a community? I mean, there's certainly now more people that feel like they can more easily withdraw and stay home with their iPad, mm-hmm. or they feel like loneliness that they've never felt before. And so what's attacking that thought or that ability that I can go create community, because that sounds intimidating to a lot of people.
It really is. But I think the biggest thing, and I'm going to use the word pride, but it's probably not pride in the way that most people think about it. I think pride in the sense that, well, what will people think of me? And I don't want to be seen as the needy person, or I don't want to be seen as the pushy person. And so pride tells us this lie that I want to control how other people view me.
True.
And when we're willing to be authentic and we're willing to say, look, I don't do it all right. And you know what? You're really good. One of the things I do is with people is I'll say, I really respect that about you, or I really admire that. I wish I could be more like that. Well, I may be stronger in other areas, but they're strong in that area. And when you approach people that way, instead of saying, let me show you my resume, let me show you all the things I'm good at, but rather go to the other person and say, I want to learn more how you do that. I find that community becomes a lot more genuine, and it becomes more readily connected with that other person because they're feeling valued. And then they'll turn to you and say, boy, you have some things to offer too. I'd like to learn those things from you. And so I would say pride is the number one thing that hinders relationship. And I think some of our busyness actually is a way of avoiding dealing with our mm-hmm. pride.
What would be the opposite of pride? Would it be vulnerability? Or
vulnerability, humility, authenticity. I think a lot of the transparency. Mm-hmm. I think being willing to look bad, being willing to admit, hey, I don't have it together. That's really hard for us. It's a very, very difficult thing.
It's impossible for most.
Yeah.
I mean, why would you want to put yourself in that light?
And I think it's because the goal of becoming more like Jesus and getting that something more is so appealing, attractive, that I'm willing to go through those difficult, dark things.
Mm-hmm.
And I can just say in my own life, yes, it's not been fun to go through those things. But the more that I experience of my relationship with God, it's like I don't want to just settle somewhere and be missing out on that.
Yeah. All right. Word that just popped into my head, courage. Sounds like this is going to require courage.
It is. You've got to, you know, a lot of times I use this example in the book, but when I would go in junior high, they would have these dances at our school, you know, the school dance in junior high. And as a junior high boy, that we'd all stand on the side, you know, and they really should be called junior high stands instead of junior high dances, because nobody would have the courage. But what I learned over the years is there was a couple, you know, just a few guys who would be willing to step out on the dance floor and ask a girl to dance, and they got to dance with the pretty girls. And the rest of us were standing on the sidelines and, you know, thinking we're cool.
Yeah,
but those guys got to dance with the pretty girls.
Yeah.
So, and I think the same thing happens in our lives is, yeah, you can stand on the sidelines and watch the other people dance, but God's inviting you into the dance. And if you're not willing to get off of the wall and step into the dance floor, even though you might get a little rejection, even though things may not go so smoothly and you might look a little foolish from time to time, but you get to dance with the pretty girl. You get to dance and be a part of the rhythm of God, and that to me is worth it all.
You know, it's we always need to go get sometimes fall flat on our face and have something not work out the way you think it's going to work out, and you always learn something. And if you don't take yourself too seriously, and you can kind of chuckle a little bit, I mean, it does make life a lot easier, doesn't it?
It really does. And I think with courage, you mentioned that word courage. I think with courage, it really comes down to this issue of not waiting for the fear to go away, but just pushing through it and saying, like you said, I'm willing to fall on my face a little bit. Again, because the motivation is I want to get to dance, you know?
Yeah. Just power through it a little bit.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just need to hang in there another 5 seconds.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Maybe in that 5 seconds, you found the courage to go ask the girl to dance.
Yeah.
And that's all it took was 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah. But those critical 5 seconds are a big deal.
Yes.
So it's courage to power through
it. That sounds like a name of a new book, The 5 Second Factor.
You
like that.
Thank you.
You should do
thank
that,
you.
Bill.
Patent pending, patent pending. You all heard that. If there's a book that comes out by you that says the 5 second thing,
the 5 second factor. See, I even gave it a cool title. You just said 5 seconds.
I'm going to sue. All right. Are you wondering about something more, pursuing the life you were made to live? And maybe you have got a question. Maybe you've got a concern or something you've heard us talk about you would like to learn more about. Maybe you'd like us to flesh out a point that Jason has made a little bit more. Let us know what that is, because this hour is all about you. 877-933-2484. Now, Jason, your book can be easily picked up on Amazon.com, but do you have some social feeds you have as well?
Yeah, I also put together a website called lifeinprocess.com, lifeinprocess.com, and I've got a podcast there and as well as a store. So I put together small group guides for the book, Something More, as well as I wrote some journals and other materials that are all there at lifeinprocess.com. And so that's the website. And then my Twitter handle is @StonehouseJason. @StonehouseJason, and my Instagram is Pastor JTS. So I'd love to be able to stay in touch with you and love to hear what you think about the book.
I appreciate you being available for listeners just like you did now. Well, let's take a little break. We come back more with Jason Stonehouse, who's in studio. I always love when people come into the studio. We'll be back in 90 seconds. Getting your eyes on the prize, that's always the right thing to do when it comes to your walk with God. And Jason Stonehouse has written a book called Something More, Pursuing the Life You Were Made to Live. He's in my studio. And let's talk about eyes on the prize a little bit. That's everything.
Yeah, it really is. I think a lot of times in order for us to do the hard work that's required for us to embrace the life God has for us, we have to be focused on why would we do this? What is the prize at the end of this? What is the focal point that we're going? A lot of times when I do marriage counseling for a couple, is one of the first exercises I'll do is I'll give them homework and I'll say, I want you to come back with a list of the things that if your marriage was working right, if there wasn't maybe the presence of sin, what would your marriage look like? How would you guys relate with one another? What is that dream that you have? And then when they come back, it just changes the whole tone from, you know, conflicting with one another to now saying, wait, could we really have that kind of marriage? Well, I think the same thing comes in a relationship with God. If we can get a picture of what God is really inviting us into, it would be so appealing, so attractive that we say, what do I need to do? How much money do I need to spend to get that? Yeah. Because that sounds so amazing and I want that for my life. And I think if we could all get a picture of that, it would give us the motivation, the drive that we're going to need to really press into it. So the eyes on the prize thing is huge.
I like that a lot. All right, let's talk about, because you keep saying something more, and I know this clicks with every person listening, because it doesn't matter what area of your life you're involved in doing something, you probably want something more. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's say you're in a church and you're sitting there week after week going, I want something more. And maybe I want a something more church.
Yeah. Well, as a pastor, obviously, I wrote the chapter on having a something more church almost for those in leadership in churches to say, how do we craft this? But I think for the attender in the church to look at church as an environment rather than as a dispensary of spiritual goods and services. It's an environment that God invites you into, but don't look at it as something that it's going to do your spiritual life for you, but to say, what can I utilize here at the church? How can I benefit from a sermon? How can I grow by stepping into a service opportunity and really move and have progress in my faith? But I think for the church leader, if you want to see something more start to develop in your church, is really this idea of make the end goal about transformation. It's not about getting more people in your program or more people in your church or doing the things that everybody expects a church to do, but to say what is going to be required for transformation to take place. And I think if we all started with our end goal in mind of saying we want to see people transformed, we want people to experience more, then we would start building our programs very differently if we knew that the end goal was transformation. And so really be able to let the programs come as a result of the purpose, and that let the programs be part of someone's process of spiritual growth so that we can celebrate not, hey, we had 14 people show up at small group, but we can say, no, we had 3 people who for the first time decided to pray out loud or whatever it might be. And so we start celebrating a different thing. But most of the times in churches, we're celebrating nickels and noses. You know, how many people are at the thing? How much money, you know, offering did we bring in? And I think we need to change the scorecard when it comes to church. If you really want a church that is producing something more kinds of Christians, it's going to be one that really is focused on the transformation of the person.
I like that. Yeah. So in your book, you've talked about, you know, if we're satisfied with life and faith as is, we will never experience something more. Now, I know for many people, they like predictability. They like routine. But we don't want to be fooled into thinking that that's all there is.
Yeah, I think there's a mentality that we have of like, I'm going to get to a certain point and I'm just going to stick there. And I use the example in the book of, can you imagine a kid in third grade who says, I got to third grade now, and everybody else in the class says, well, we're going to fourth grade. And he's like, no, I like my teacher. I'm going to stay in third grade. I love third grade. My teacher is so fun. And, you know, and then all the kids are going to fifth grade and sixth grade and like, nope, still in third grade. I love third grade. You know,
I pray your voice changes by fourth grade.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That's still your grade.
Yeah,
your voice
exactly.
In fourth grade, you're in a lot of trouble.
But the idea being, we'd all look at that kid and we'd say, that's ridiculous. You're supposed to make progress.
Right,
And I think we allow too many people to stay in third grade, spiritually speaking, instead of really moving forward because we get comfortable. We know how it works. We know how God's supposed to do this and that. And I'm like, there's a whole adventure in fourth grade and you've got a whole new thing to learn in fifth grade. And you're missing out on all that because you're just like, I love third grade so much and I'm going to stick here. So I think that as is mentality is something that we fall for too often, and we need progress. Is part, it's implied, it's expected in the Christian journey. We should be moving forward.
All right, so talk about how humility might play a role in all this.
I think it's really the idea of being teachable. It's the idea of saying, I don't know all there is to know. And I think not always looking to the expert to teach me what I don't know. Because the reality is there's somebody in your life. There's somebody in your small group. There's somebody around you. I mean, I have 3 daughters, 16, 14, and 10, and I learn a ton from them. And even though I've had longer, you know, time in life than them, I learn a lot from them. And I think if we had that mentality to be a Christian community with one another, where we're all sharing what we know, we're all sharing the ways God has shown up in our lives, we would just be so much richer because of that experience. But what often happens is we look for the spiritual superstars, or we look for the authors of the books and the pastors and those people, which is fine. There's something to add there, but we're missing out on the wealth of treasure that's all around us in the people around us.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, Jason, that there's a lot of folk out there that have maybe settled for a more watered-down version of their Christian faith, their life? You know, you even talk about simple things like 3 people prayed out loud. There might be people listening that go, I'm never going to pray out loud, ever.
Right, yeah.
And it's something as simple as that. You know,
it really is.
Just talking to God.
It's a lot simpler than I think we make it, and we almost get intimidated. That's why our mission statement as a church is together taking one step closer to loving Jesus and loving people. Because I found in my own journey, it's not the big spiritual leaps that really helped me to grow. It was the one step closer. It was going from not praying out loud to doing a sentence popcorn prayer, you know, to that and moving forward on that process. So it's that one step. And so I always ask when I'm preaching, I always encourage our congregation to say, what is your one step? What would it look like to take one step? I'm not asking you to change everything in your life. Take one step forward. And as we go through a year, taking one step, we look back and we're like, man, I can't believe I got this far. Mm-hmm. And it's just by taking that one step forward.
And that might be what a lot of people are thinking today. I need to take one step.
That's it. That's it. One step.
Can you give me an example of a couple of one-step things that people listening would be willing to do today that they can put their hands around, their arms around, going, I can do that?
Well, I think the best one is to buy my book.
And okay. All right.
That's a simple thing.
Yeah,
no,
of course
kidding.
It is.
No, I think it's that simple thing of like saying, hey, I may not be able to take an hour in reflection and contemplation, but maybe I could take a 10-minute walk at lunch break, you know, and walk around a lake or go out in a park or something and take some time and just try to maybe talk to God out loud as I'm walking around or something like that. It could be as simple as saying, you know what, instead of I'm going to do devotions every day for the rest of my life, why not find a verse, write it down on a 3x5 card or put it in your phone and then just bring it up at those little minutes that you have between meetings and things. And instead of checking Facebook, why not read that scripture and memorize it and just allow the words of God to just flow through your mind? It's a very simple one step that allows to start bringing God's word. It might be instead of volunteering for a ministry that's going to go the whole year, maybe I do a one-time event and say, hey, could I help out in that? Could I be a part of that? And again, just that one step, I'm going to take one night and I'm going to do this. And so it's just really breaking down some of those bigger goals and saying, how do I lean into the direction I know God wants me to go? And maybe I'm kind of scared or intimidated to go the full thing, but what would a step in the right direction look like? And then why not take that step? Why not be courageous about it? And sometimes ask somebody else, say, I'm going to take this step, and I would love for you to pray for me about that because I want to go forward in this way.
Have you, I know you, as a pastor, you've probably heard people tell you about their stumbling blocks, about all the things that are getting in the way of a closer walk with God. That must be kind of frustrating and inspiring for you, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think the stumbling block issue is, again, we get overwhelmed because we're like, I got all these things and I don't know how I could ever fit this in. I don't know what I could do. I remember as a youth pastor, I had this guy who was a wrestler. And he's like, I think I need to spend some time with God. And he was just starting to get interested in the things of faith. But he's like, I just don't have time. And so I went to him about 2 hours later and I said, hey, I totally lied. I'm just going to confess that right on the air here. But I said to him, I said, there's this girl and she's really interested in you. He's like, really? Is she hot? And I'm like, well, you know, she's a pretty girl, you know. I said, but here's the thing with her. I said, she likes to talk on the phone. And I said, she's gonna want probably an hour or two a day with you on the phone. I could do that, he says, you know. And I'm like, she's gonna want you to take her out and you know, probably gonna be weekly, you're gonna do this. And he's like, oh yeah, totally, who is she, you know. And I said, wait a second, 2 hours ago you told me you had no time in your schedule, and all of a sudden a whole bunch freed up when I mentioned this girl that might be interested in you. And it was just a way of kind of helping us all to see that it's there for us if we want it, but we have to long for it. We have to be willing to remove some of those stumbling blocks, because some of those stumbling blocks are not truly stumbling blocks.
They're not.
We've constructed them.
Yes. Yeah. You know? And we've put them up almost as defense barriers,
right?
Haven't we?
Yeah. Like, as a way to keep us safe, or a way to keep us comfortable.
This is protecting me.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I don't have to get uncomfortable. I don't have to step outside of that zone, if you will. So
yeah. Just a couple of minutes left, Jason. Thanks for coming into the studio, of course. And was there any one chapter in your book that you had a harder time writing than the others?
You know, I was really debating in the book about the chapter about something more church, because the rest of the book is really focused on the believer and their journey. But I thought, if we just get a whole bunch of believers who are moving in this direction, but we don't have environments and churches that begin to think this way, we're going to be really almost setting them up for a disconnect. Okay. And so I think really just trying to make sure that what I wrote in that chapter would be helpful for churches, but also that the individual congregation member could step in and actually help create that in their churches as well. And so that was a challenge.
Yeah. Well, thank you for coming into the studio today. Jason Stonehouse has been my guest, and his book is called Something More, Pursuing the Life You Were Made to Live. You can find that on Amazon.com. If you want to head over there, you can always check it out. I think the first chapter you can always download for free, which is a nice little intro, isn't
it?
Yeah. And that wraps up our time with Jason, but we're going to have a great second hour coming up. Holly Melton's going to be joining us, and she's got a crazy story, and she's just a lot of fun as well. So the whole day is going to be more fun coming up. Thanks for listening. We'll take a short break and be back in just a minute. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.